There is a spiritual war taking place in the supernatural realm all around us each and every day. The good guys? God and his heavenly hosts of angels. The bad guys? Satan and his shadowy group of demons and watchers. Who are the other players in this cosmic battle? We're going to find out right now. Hello, everybody in house. Welcome to the Skywatch Television Studio. I am Joe Horn. We're so delighted to have you join us on the program today. I'm joined in the studio by the Skywatch investigative team and, of course, this week's special guest. I'm going to introduce him right now. He's a PhD in Hebrew, Bible, and Semitic languages and holds a master's degree in ancient history and Hebrew studies, best-selling author Dr. Michael Heiser. Welcome back, Dr. Michael. It's always such a pleasure to have you in studio today. For those of you who missed the last few weeks, we really want to encourage you to go back and check out the program. We've been talking to Mike about his companion books to the Book of Enoch. And of course, later you're going to find out how you can get a copy of the hardback original Book of Enoch, along with his two study guides and a DVD, highly instructional. Now, what is the Book of Enoch? That's what we've been exploring. Why do so many people teach about the Book of Enoch? Why is it such a hot topic? People that are scholars, they research the Bible, they're looking at extra-biblical books. And I can't think of a better person to have with us today, Tom, than Dr. Michael Heiser.
Yes.
So, Mike, last week we talked about some of the controversial spots in the Book of Enoch throughout the writing, where maybe Christians don't agree on everything, maybe they don't see eye to eye. There are people on this side of the camp, people on this side of the camp. And we kind of left our viewers with just a taste of that. I want to ask you, in the Book of Enoch, how can it be writing about the Messiah if chapter 71 has him almost portrayed as the Messiah? Help me understand this kind of bizarre information.
Yeah, I think that probably the best explanation, and it's not mine, it's not unique to me, is that what we have up to that point, up to chapter 71, which is where this weird thing where, you know, all of a sudden Enoch is the Son of Man, whereas before they're clearly two different characters. So it's not that, you know, somebody just sort of comes in there and says, well, we're going to just change our theology now for a chapter, and then we'll go back to... It's not like that. What happens is you have Enoch sort of on his way. Think of the whole idea of Enoch being taken off the earth by God, transported into the heavenly realms. A lot of scholars figured out or have figured that what you get up to about chapter 69 or 70 is sort of like a waking state, a waking ascent, you know, that Enoch is seeing things on his way again to see the Lord when he gets there, you know, then he has these visions and so on and so forth. But one of them, so the theory goes, is in chapter 71, where all of a sudden he goes into a dream or a trance-like state, and he all of a sudden sees himself as one of the characters in the visions he's seen up to this point. And it just so happens his character is the Son of Man.
Interesting. Does the Book of Parables add any new supernatural characters to the spiritual world, the war that I kind of led the program with, than the ones besides, you know, the Watchers and Satan, or the ones that people might be familiar with?
And specifically, you're asking about the Book of the Parables because Volume 2 of the Reader's Commentary picks up in that section in the Book of Enoch.
Yeah, the Book of Parables, again, I think we mentioned this a couple episodes ago, doesn't really use the term watcher for what happens, you know, the villains of Genesis 6. It uses, you know, angel, but it's the same story, so it's just different terminology. So you get a little bit of a different terminology there. You have angels of power, like, like what are those? They're actually kind of interesting because the places where they occur, they are linked to, and we've talked about this before too, they're linked to earthly kings and earthly powers. So you get that principality, you know, sort of New Testament feel going on here, or the Daniel 10 kind of stuff. You get Ophanim. Ophanim is Hebrew for wheels. This is from Ezekiel 1. Well, in Enoch, they're actually the supernatural characters, entities, instead of just wheels. So, you know, you get things like this, and as you go on in Jewish literature especially, they start kind of name-calling lots of different things that either are terms in the Hebrew Bible for something else, they become angelic figures later, or they just sort of make up other categories. So there's some of that going on in the book that Christians wouldn't find very familiar. I think the one that would sort of make people stop in their tracks, though, I'm going to read you a little section here. This is chapter 42.
Okay.
Wisdom found no place where she might dwell. Then a dwelling place was assigned her in the heavens. So there's a character known as Wisdom in the heavens, and it's female language.
Right,
Wisdom
right,
went
right.
forth to make her dwelling among the children of men and found no dwelling place. Wisdom returned to her place and took her seat among the angels. Mm-hmm. So people would hear that and think, well, that's just totally unbiblical. I'm going to shut my book of Enoch and throw it away. Well, until you get right. to Proverbs 8.
Okay.
Yes.
Because there you have Wisdom as a character as well. And it's actually important for a number of reasons, because this character in Enoch, she has a seat among the angels. So she's a member of the heavenly host, mm-hmm. the divine council. In other books in this period, Wisdom gets elevated to the status of being enthroned next to God or sharing God's throne. And you say, well, that just sounds crazy. Well, if you go to Proverbs 8, Wisdom is a character that turns out to be the co-creator. She witnesses and assists God at creation. And now you're thinking, well, that's really heresy. You got to stop and say, wait a minute, that's Proverbs 8.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's Bible stuff. So what do we do with that? Well, what Enoch does is it's just a split up cast of characters. But what the New Testament does with that is something altogether different.
Hmm.
Do you want to get into that?
Yeah, please.
You
can't leave us there. I didn't even have to answer.
Doubt.
The crowd is like, oh, come on, with all of a sudden the three ladies are interested.
Because you're talking about wisdom being associated with being female, and right. I love that. I always have in Proverbs right. 8. I caught that before. I mean,
it was way before feminism, so I'm interested.
I love it. Yeah.
So we have to, I'm going to preface what the New Testament does with this, and this is a necessary preface. We have to realize that wisdom in Proverbs 8 is a spiritual being, okay? This is a spiritual character. Spiritual characters don't have gender because they don't have bodies, okay? Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about literal gender here. We get the she terminology because wisdom, chokhmah in Hebrew, is grammatically feminine. So that's the appropriate pronoun to use.
Right.
And you say, well, now wait a minute. You know, how can you have wisdom co-creator? I thought Jesus was the co-creator. Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And he is. John 1, these different right. passages. Okay. In Luke's gospel, this is Jesus debating one of the, another group of Pharisees, the critics of the day. He says, woe to you lawyers also, for you load people with burdens hard to bear, and yourselves do not touch the burdens with one of your fingers. Woe to you, for you build the tombs of the prophets, whom your fathers killed. So you are witnesses, and you consent to the deeds of your fathers, for they killed them, and you build their tombs. Therefore also, the wisdom of God said, I will send them prophets and apostles, some of whom they will kill and persecute. Now, if you go back to the Old Testament, the speaker there is God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now somehow God and wisdom are tied together. And obviously, there was no time when God lacked wisdom. Okay, this is like a personification of one of his attributes. But here's the important part. I will send you, in Matthew 23, the same scene, but just in a different gospel, Jesus says, I send you prophets. And wise men and scribes, some of whom you will kill. So Luke identifies wisdom with God. Matthew identifies wisdom with Jesus. So who is wisdom? Who's the co-creator? Jesus or God? Again, Jesus and God are drawn together mm-hmm. by the wisdom language. Now that's high Christology in academic language,
mm-hmm.
a deity of Christ kind of stuff. Because wisdom is pre-existent. She was always there with God because there was never a time when God was stupid, okay? There's never right. a time when God lacks wisdom.
Sure.
She's eternal, okay? Because this is an attribute of God, cast in literary form as a character. But Enoch, you notice, Enoch doesn't have that theology yet.
Okay.
Wisdom is a separate character. So what the New Testament actually does is it sort of provides a little bit of a steering or corrective to Jewish thought. Like, you're familiar with all these characters here.
Right.
Well, they all converge in this man of Nazareth. So you might want to listen to what he says.
And you think that's why wisdom is described in feminine terms then?
Yeah, wisdom is just, is chokmah. It's grammatically feminine. So languages have this weird feature. A language like Hebrew or Greek mm-hmm. okay, what we call inflected languages, assign gender to nouns and to verb forms. Why? So that when you're reading the text, you know which verb goes with what noun. You know what the subject right, and the object right. is. There's an alignment. It's an artificial system, but it's there. You know, German, das Mädchen, little girl, it's neuter. Mm-hmm. German has a neuter gender. It's just an invention of the language. Hebrew, ear, city, is feminine. Why? Well, because that's just the way we assigned it. You know, we refer to cities today in feminine terms.
Yeah.
We refer to ships. You
ships
know,
right. feminine,
I mean,
right.
we do this kind of thing because English is an inheritance
sure.
of some of these other languages, and it just comes along.
And it's interesting that in Genesis, when God is creating man and woman, it also carries some of the same sense that they are being made in his image, male and female, mm-hmm. created he them. But I noticed that, you know, once you get past Genesis and you get out into the broader culture, that this idea of wisdom as feminine is carried into all of
yes.
the goddess mythologies.
You get
there was
it.
Always this idea, right, that wisdom is personified as a woman.
Yeah, in Greek,
I learned, by
Sophia.
The way, through marriage, that it's really real. that you're a wise man if you can learn to listen to your wife sometimes, right?
Well,
or a
yeah.
lot of times, or maybe most of the time, and then just pretend that her great ideas were yours.
Well, sometimes the instruction is a little more brutal. My wife loves to point out that I don't know how to use our TV at home. She's a gadget person.
He's so looking at Catherine because as soon as he gets anything, a new Roku, whatever.
I still haven't set
I'm
up
waiting on her right
too.
Now.
Yeah, she's the first one he calls. Come make this work.
Okay. Yes, I have a PhD, but I can't use my TV.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, that actually makes sense.
That's what right. it comes down to. I'm just not a gadget guy. It just
right.
like escapes
yeah.
me. And she's like, poor dummy.
But wisdom is also instinctive. And, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, like, between me and her is that men, you know, we tend to kind of memorize facts.
Mm-hmm.
So our brains can be databases of factoids or whatever. But with Nita, it's more instinctive. She'll see and know things. And I'm like, wait, how do you know that? It's more instinct.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So we are made different but the same. But the
observation, you know, holds. In Greek, it's Sophia. Okay, it's a feminine noun.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this kind of thing. In wider, you know, Greek thought, the muses, again,
mm-hmm.
these are female figures. And mm-hmm. and a lot of it does have to do with sort of, you know, this intuitive sense of whatever, you know, the subject matter, you know, sort mm-hmm. of is, that this was just observed. And, you know, it becomes a feature of the language. And we inherit that and so on and so forth. Now today, I mean, I get emails periodically about how, you know, God is a woman and, you know, the Trinity is, you know, different genders and no genders and transgender, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, look, you're misunderstanding the role of grammatical gender.
Right.
You know, if you're going to base this idea on something, please, you know, because you're going to sound like an idiot, okay, if you do this, because every language takes inanimate objects
mm-hmm.
and assigns them gender.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, you know, does my cup have like biological organs? You know, no, of course not. But in the language, again, to make it readable and comprehensible,
mm-hmm.
you have to be able to align nouns and verbs, okay, in these kinds of language. So it's a utility
yeah.
of the way the language works. And when people use words, they might use them symbolically. They might use them metaphorically. And then you get word pictures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
mm-hmm.
to illustrate some of these concepts, this is how it works. But in Enoch, again, the interesting thing to me is it's wisdom is distinct from the Son of Man.
When you were reading this out of Enoch earlier, to me, I'm like, wait a minute, is this part of the divine council? Or is there a girl hanging out with all the guy angels up there among the Elohim, right?
Yeah, you actually get. Again, in Ben Sirach, the Wisdom of Sirach, there's a scene where wisdom is co-enthroned. Can I just think about that? In Jewish thought, that becomes part of what I talk about in Unseen Realm, the two powers in heaven idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wisdom becomes another way of expressing the fact of two-ness
mm-hmm.
okay, in a Godhead. But in the New Testament, again, all of these things converge, whether it's the angel mm-hmm. or the name or wisdom or the Son of Man. They're all converged into Jesus. And again, if you're a literate reader, again, newsflash, writers write books for people who can read, okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the New Testament has a lot of literary artistry in it. So they're assuming a certain body of knowledge in their readers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're a literate Jew and you're familiar with stuff like Enoch and some of these other books and you're reading the Gospel of Matthew, you know that things are being funneled and telescoped into Jesus. And that is theological messaging. It's intentional and it's important.
So now you mentioned like other spirits or entities or whatever that are in the book of Enoch. We learn of these new beings, mm-hmm. wisdom being one. Now, you briefly a moment ago mentioned the Ophanim wheels. You know, it made me think of Ezekiel, of course, and his wheels in the middle of the wheel. But these do appear to be living creatures that are somehow also transporting this throne or whatever it is, right? Is that, without getting all over into, what did you call it, fantasy TV? Without getting my big hair weird.
The Fantasy Channel.
Yeah, the Fantasy Channel. But are there other entities, identifiable characters?
Well, the vocabulary that not only the Bible, but you know, other literature is going to use for members of the spiritual world, you can really put into three buckets. Okay, if you actually went through the terminology, there are terms that are used to describe what a supernatural being is. You know, ontological terminology, spirit, Elohim. Okay, that's what it is. Then there are terms that describe its place in hierarchy. Okay, sons of God is actually one of those because it's language drawn from the royal court in the ancient world. That's a status term.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third bucket would be job descriptions, roles. Okay, Ophanim is where I would put that bucket because if you reference to not only Ezekiel but other astrological, astronomical literature from this period, it has something to do with the cycles of the stars and the constellations and therefore the cycles of time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and in Enoch, especially the next section, which I'll get into in the third volume, the Book of the Luminaries, you get these descriptions of supernatural agents assigned certain functions in the cosmos. Again, this is how they were perceived as operating. You know, they don't have a scientific. They're not astrophysicists, okay?
Right.
But they're looking at the heavens, and the heavens do things. Okay, they work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, how do they work? Who's in charge of that? What's the power source behind that? So it's God tasking members of the heavenly host to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how, you know, this was the metaphor that they used.
We're going to have
across.
To take a break, but we're not going anywhere. And when we come back, we'll continue this discussion with Dr. Michael Heiser. We'll be right back.
Call now and get the companion to the Book of Enoch Special Collection, featuring the original Book of Enoch in beautifully bound hardback edition and both of Dr. Michael Heiser's groundbreaking companion guides to the Book of Enoch, along with the shocking expose, Fallen Angels and Ancient Aliens on DVD. This is an exclusive offer for our Skywatch television audience. Yours for a donation of $35 plus shipping and handling. Volumes 1 and 2 of the Companion Guides to Enoch unveil what most of the modern church has never heard regarding how the sin of the watchers in Enoch 6 through 16 helped frame the mission of Jesus, how the descriptions of the Antichrist, the Messiah, the end times day of the Lord, and the final judgment connect to Genesis 6 and the Nephilim. This and so much more. Plus, you will also receive on DVD the Book of Enoch, Fallen Angels and Ancient Aliens, an exclusive production with Dr. Michael Heiser regarding the blatant lies of ancient astronaut theory and the horrifying nature of fallen angels and alien abduction. This DVD is a must-have. But that's not all. You'll also receive the beautifully printed hardback edition of the original historical Book of Enoch from Defender Publishing, perfect for assisting serious researchers and students in the study of the Bible and the early age. Sold separately, these items hold a retail value of $90. Yours now for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling while supplies last. Whether you've read the Book of Enoch or want to journey through it for the first time, without a doubt, you'll find the companion to the Book of Enoch Special Collection absolutely essential. Order now at skywatchtvstore.com or call 1-844-750-4985.
Welcome back to Skywatch TV. I'm Joe Horn, and we are wrapping up, unfortunately, what has been an incredible four-week series with Dr. Michael Heiser on the Book of Enoch. Really a deep dive, and even deeper if you're able to get a copy of both of the companion books. And that's what I want to spend the remainder of this program dealing with, Dr. Mike. Both of these, very supplemental. If a viewer is watching this program and they're still not sure about the Book of Enoch and what to make of it, between the offer that they just saw and where they can get a hard copy of the original book and then your supplemental books and then this DVD where you're interviewed with by Stephen Bancars on the subject of the Book of Enoch and fallen angels. It's so much material. Mm-hmm. And like Donna said in the last episode, the way you write is always to help people that are just getting started be able to comprehend and digest this material. But there's no lack of theology. If a person's been around for a long time and they've studied the Book of Enoch, believe me when I tell you, there is stuff in here you've never seen before.
Yeah.
How would these two companion volumes really help the reader understand more about the Book of Enoch and its significance?
Yeah, the titling, using a word like companion and then having reader's commentary in the subtitle is intentional. I mean, when people hear the word commentary, they typically think of, well, this is going to be a verse by verse, line by line, word by word. It's going to feel real tedious. And this is not actually what that is. What I try to do is if you were reading the Book of Enoch and I was sitting next to you, I would be pointing out things of interest in the book with an eye toward picking out things that have some relationship to your Old or New Testament.
Okay.
And so I'm sort of the guide by the side. Hey, look at this phrase here. You know, this is what they would have been thinking when they, saw that phrase. Mm-hmm. And this is how it spills over, into things that you're more familiar with, like, Christianity, New Testament, Old Testament, that sort of thing. So that's one of the goals of the reader's commentary, to sort of just take you from being someone who sits down with the Book of Enoch, hey, they told me I should read this, so I'm doing it now.
Sure.
And when you inevitably run into things that they sound a little familiar, but they're a little different, okay, what's going on there? So to sort of help you unravel what it is you're reading, orient you a little bit.
That's so
good. Try to situate what you have here with the stuff that might be more familiar. The other thing that it'll do is, the hard copy that you're selling is, I believe, Charles's translation, which is the one that I use in the book. Mm-hmm. And and again, Charles' translation is in public domain, but for, decades, maybe even a century, it's fair to say, that was the go-to translation in English. Now, what I try to do is when other scholars have gone through Enoch, and this has been done fairly recently, there are really technical commentaries on Enoch, and they produce their own original translations. That was part of their project. So when there's something different, okay, instead of this in Charles, the new translation would say this, or scholars think this is probably better because they're comparing Greek manuscripts.
Right.
They're going back to the Dead Sea Scrolls. They're looking at Ethiopic in the case of the parables. So I will note differences that readers might come along and stumble upon if they're reading Charles and then they go out maybe to the internet or they find something else and it reads a little bit differently. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you what the options are and why translators land where they land.
Well, and I would say that the reason that we're providing this free actually with your book is because we found corrupted versions that wasn't really Charles, right? So on the internet, know how that is. There's all kinds of crazy stuff people have put together, and we wanted to make sure that they at least had a trustable version of Charles on the Book of Enoch, and it, of course, is the one that you're working with, and the fact that you point out those differences. Now, for the viewer, what's the difference between Volume 1 of the Reader's Commentary, Volume 2, and what will they look forward to in the Volume 3 that will be coming?
Yeah, Volume 1 covers the Book of the Watchers, which is the first 36 chapters of the Book of Enoch. It is just what it sounds like. It's all about, the Enochian retelling and expansion and commentary on the Genesis 6 episode. It's just fixated on that. The second volume, chapters 37 through 71, the Book of the Parables, again, attention shifts from, okay, here's why the world is a mess.
Right.
The Messiah is coming. In that second book, in the Book of the Parables, or Parables, the writer will dip back into, he'll remind the readers, now this is going to happen because of that. Remember that Watcher story? You know, so they'll do that. There's still, you know, Genesis 6 Watcher material in the Book of the Parables, but the focus primarily is on fixing the problem, the final judgment. Now, after this, again, one of our earlier episodes, we commented how what we think of as the Book of Enoch is actually several books.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What's next, the next 10 chapters, 72 through 82, scholars call the Book of the Luminaries.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you get all the calendar stuff, all the astral imagery, you know, supernatural beings, you know, behind, you know, the passage of time and the weather and, you know, this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of calendar and astral thinking there. And then beyond that point, you have sort of stories that scholars figure belong in the corpus, in the whole collection, but don't really have that much of a coherent order. There's a letter, you know, the Epistle of Enoch that he writes. There's the Book of Noah. Okay, so another telescoped treatment of, well, what's up with Noah during the time of the Watchers? So that stuff will be attached, you know, to the end of the book. So really from chapter 72 onward, it's a lot of astral stuff, a lot of Noah stuff, and, you know.
So they have that to also look forward to, and that'll complete the three-volume series.
Yeah.
And then one of the viewers, somebody in the live audience, actually, with the 30 seconds that you have left, wanted to know if in Revelation 11, one of the witnesses is going to be Enoch.
Well, that is not a New Testament or Christian invention, okay? There were Jews who parsed it that way. And it's because Enoch and Elijah were the only two that didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you have other Jewish traditions, because we don't have described how Isaiah died, so maybe he, you know. No, the two ones that really get the focus and the attention are Enoch and Elijah.
Mm-hmm.
So that is part of Second Temple tradition, and I think Revelation is tracking on that. It might be going a little bit of a different direction. I don't want to say too much because I'm using this in a novel. But
we did
fundamentally
give you 30 seconds.
There.
Yeah.
I'm zipping it now. So.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time, and this will conclude the four-week series we've done on these wonderful books. Make sure you get your copy of both the Book of Enoch and, of course, Dr. Michael Heiser supplemental companion books in the offer that we just showed you. Mike, thank you from the bottom of my heart, not for just being here with us, but for all of your life dedication to this kind of research and imparting it to us. Mike, for everybody in the studio, I'm Joe Horn. Keep your eyes on the prize, which is Jesus Christ. We'll be back.
Thank you for watching. Keep up with all of SkyWatch TV's programs by subscribing to our channel at YouTube and following us on Facebook and Twitter.